Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. There's the intense feeling, of course, that political polarization right now exists for many reasons. One of them, each side believes the other's wrong and that their own side knows better. But Brown University cognitive scientist Steve Sloman says the truth is, basically, all human beings, all of us, are ignorant. In fact, it's our natural state, he says. But that isn't a terrible thing because we are terrific at something else. We're terrific at creating communities of knowledge. But how do we stop those communities from battling each other in a way that's detrimental to us all? Well, Sloman delves into all of this in his new book, The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. And he joins us now. Steve Sloman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's great to have you. So we're all ignorant. And I'll throw myself into that group, of course. Why? Why do you say that?
Well, you can throw me into that group, too. Well, I say it in part because there's a lot of work showing that people can't answer a lot of basic questions. You know that 25% of Americans don't know whether the Earth revolves around the sun or the sun revolves around the Earth.
In 2017?
Well, this study was done a few years ago,
but okay.
In the modern age, that's right. And it's not just true of Americans, it's true of people all around the world.
Wow. Okay. But you say it's more fundamental than that. I mean, you write that ignorance is our natural state and that exists for a reason. And why?
Yeah. So the real claim isn't that people are stupid. I mean, people are relatively ignorant, but the real idea is that people think they understand things better than they do. And this has been demonstrated in the psychological laboratory by a great psychologist at Yale named Frank Kyle and his students, who showed that if you ask people to explain simple objects like how toilets work or how even ballpoint pens work, they find themselves unable to do so. And in fact, what asking them to explain does is it bursts their bubble of understanding so that they rate their understanding as lower than they thought it was. So people admit they lived in an illusion of knowledge by virtue of trying to explain how things work and failing.
Hmm. So that goes hand in hand, though, with what makes us such a wildly successful species, one of the things. And that is that, yes, we have this illusion of knowledge, but exists in part because, you know, as you write, we have communal knowledge that we've as organisms, we've been able to outboard expertise in so many different areas that it allows us as a species to accomplish a lot, right?
Exactly. So the idea is that we live in this illusion of knowledge because we confuse others' knowledge for our own. And the reason we have trouble distinguishing the source of knowledge is because we're all in it together. There's a division of cognitive labor, so we bring our own little bit of expertise to the table, and everyone else brings their own little bit of expertise, so that together there's a lot of expertise, there's a lot of knowledge. But the confusion has to do with what we know relative to what others know, and we sort of take credit for the community's knowledge.
Yeah, so there's a profoundly positive influence or impact of this communal knowledge. We've been talking about it in terms of, or I've been hearing you talk about it so far in terms of like communal knowledge and expertise, but there's also communal belief.
Yes.
And communal ignorance as well that all gets lumped in here.
Yeah, so I think it's important to distinguish issues like how toilets and ballpoint pens work from questions like what political policy we should pursue. So in the first case, there's general agreement about what is right, what ground truth is. So we can appeal to our community, and we tend to agree about who the experts are, right? So in the case of a toilet, there are plumbers who are experts. But when it comes to political policy, it's not so clear. So the real problem we point to is what you might think of as contagious understanding,
mm-hmm.
right? We get a sense of understanding by virtue of the fact that the people around us have a sense of understanding. But if their sense of understanding depends on the sense of understanding of the people around them, then we could have a whole community that thinks it understands how things work when, in fact, it's a house of cards, when, in fact, there's no real fundamental basis for that belief.
Yeah, I mean, so it provides a sort of social cohesion, but one that could be easily undermined if, again, as you said, it doesn't have any basis in fact. So, I mean, what are the implications for democracy then, if we're in a way sort of hardwired for this?
Yes. No, that's a good question. You know, I do think it means that democracy is not perfectly consistent with the way minds are built, which, you know, is not necessarily a knock on democracy. I'm with Churchill that, you know, democracy is the worst system except for all the others. I don't think that the reason to live in a democratic society is because it's consistent with the way the mind works. But it does suggest, I think, that we should perhaps rely on expertise more than we sometimes do. Look, societies differ a lot in the extent to which they depend on expertise. One issue we take up in the book is what's often called direct democracy. So in, for instance, California, they have referenda all the time in which they allow individual citizens to vote on complex issues. And, you know, the world is just too complex for most people to understand, or at least for anybody to understand everything. And I really think it's a mistake to put really important decisions about complex matters in the hands of people who have other things to do with their time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but see, I guess part of my mind right now is stuck on this, the double-edged sword of the human brain, right? Because on the one hand, what you're saying is this basic hardwiring and also sort of social hardwiring that we have has allowed us to put people on the moon, right? It's allowed
exactly.
us to invent the iPhone. It's allowed us to do all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it produces these pathways where we get these collective beliefs that are very, very, very hard to unwind from. So you've also done some experiments on how we can actually maybe gently start getting people to realize that they know less than they really do, and what effect that might have on these hardened sort of circles of collective belief that we have.
Right. Well, in some sense, I've already told you the procedure. So
yeah.
Kyle did this work on what he called the illusion of explanatory depth using everyday objects. We did it with political policies. So we asked people how well they understood, you know, various issues like cap and trade of carbon emissions, whether there should be unilateral sanctions on Iran, those kinds of things. And then we asked them to explain, and they found themselves unable to for the most part. And then again, we asked them to understand whether they understood the issue, and we found, like Kyle did, that we had punctured their illusion of understanding. But the other thing we did was ask them about their attitudes, how confident they felt about their attitudes towards the various policies. And we also punctured their confidence to some degree. So by virtue of explaining or trying and failing to explain how the policy worked, people became less confident, less extreme, less polarized.
So why do you think that is? I mean, what's the difference between having someone explain why they think, I don't know, clean water regulation works or doesn't versus having them defend their position?
Right. So, you know, we tend not to explain, or at least the vast majority of people tend not to engage in processes of explanation. What we do instead is we talk about our values. We talk about our community. We talk about what we think should be right and wrong, which is a discussion about how we relate to the policy. It's not actually a discussion about the policy itself. So what we propose is that if you can get the conversation to change to be one about how the policy will lead to consequences. That is a discussion that has nothing to do with you, right? That's about the policy itself on its own terms. Then you're going to find that people engage in a little more analysis. They're more open to compromise. And maybe we'll find some common ground to talk together if we talk in those terms.
And so how do you think that we might be able to practically inject this sort of way of engaging with information and policy in real life? I mean, should people like me be asking different kind of questions when I have experts or politicians on?
It's your responsibility, Magna. Absolutely.
We got to start somewhere.
We got to start somewhere. Look, I do think that the answer is not in the place that most people jump to, which is simple education, right? So we're talking about a basic property of mind. We're talking about how people work at the most fundamental level. And I don't think you can simply educate people to operate and think in an entirely different way. I mean, this isn't, I'm not arguing against the value of education in general, of course. I'm just saying that it's not going to be a silver bullet for this particular problem. So, yeah, we have to learn to reach outside our bubbles, right? We have to learn to talk to people in a respectful way. But more than anything, I think we have to try to separate the issues from our own interests. And I think we have to do it by changing the norms of discourse.
That sounds so hard to me, because separating the issues from our own interests goes, it seems entirely opposed to the fundamental human characteristics that got us here to begin with, that like we form collective groups of knowledge and interests, right?
Absolutely. But look, we're stuck. I mean, American politics, and not just American politics, is really stuck. And it might be getting worse. So it is a hard problem. It's a really hard problem. And as I said, I'm not pretending to offer a silver bullet. But we have to try.
Well, Steve Sloman, hear, hear, for trying. Every step counts, if you ask me. He's the editor-in-chief of the journal Cognition. He's a professor at Brown University, and his new book is The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. It's an absolutely fascinating read. Steve Sloman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.